Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I'm your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I have with me Martin UFO Willis.
That's right. I'm all about the UFOs.
UFOs. That sounds like a Russian. Is that how the Russians say UFO? You've been there.
They actually do. You know, yes, but you know, they actually, even though it's different letters and everything, they actually, if you say the word UFO to a Russian, they know what it is.
Really?
Yep.
Do they run in fear?
No. Actually, as much as I could talk to people there, they seem to have an interest.
Hmm.
You know, a real interest. Not like I didn't, you know, for the people I actually got to talk to that spoke English, there was no ridicule type situation that they knew about. So
that's cool.
I thought it was interesting.
That is interesting. And of course, RT, which I try not to post too much RT, because they are essentially, like with all the Russian papers, they're government ran, and they have a lot of propaganda and stuff in them. But they, and a lot of anti-American stuff, and I'm kind of partial to America personally. I like it, USA. But they cover a lot of UFO stuff.
Hmm.
But I almost feel like they are trying to bash America, because it's a lot of like, oh, America's covering up the secrets, you know, get them.
Really? Wow.
You haven't noticed that?
I haven't really, no.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, look into this.
In our news today, I have an RT post, and it's kind of a cute story, and maybe I'll save that and mention it during the news portion in just a minute. What do you think of that?
Brilliant.
Okay. So, but first, let me share who my guest is, because it's an exciting guest, a friend of mine, and a controversial figure in this field, and that is Dr. John Alexander. So, Alexander, of course, used to work in Army intelligence. He worked on non-lethal weapons. He's currently a non-lethal weapons and kind of security expert, national security expert. He, most of his work is as a consultant in the defense kind of community. So really interesting there. And he writes a lot of stuff, you know, conventional and otherwise. And what we talked to him about is his latest book, Reality Denied. And let me get the book so I can read the subtitle, because as you hear in the interview, he wanted me to read the subtitle. First-hand experiences with things that can't happen, but did. So what's really cool about this is if he's talking about paranormal experiences he's had. So really interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Now, wasn't he at, of course, I miss the UFO Congress last year, but wasn't he out there?
He was.
Talking about some of the
kind of
things?
You know, and yeah, that was essentially what he was going to do, is discuss his strange encounters. He did get into, and he does this sometimes, kind of he gets into like cases or UFO claims that can be easily debunked, and that kind of turns people off. And I think for the last talk, he could have maybe just stuck to his own experiences, like he does mostly in this interview. But we talk about that. We talk about, you know, that dynamic, and where he has his own experiences and beliefs, which are very fringe. But at the same time, he's kind of viewed as someone who poo-poos the fringe kind of ideas. And we talk about the differences in his perspective and take on all of that, which I think is really interesting.
Now he travels everywhere. I mean,
he does. He travels around the world.
All over the place.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's all over. And that's what's great about his book is that a lot of his travels are going to meet shaman, healers, right. Go to paranormal places where paranormal experiences happen, and investigate these things. And in some cases, things don't happen. In some cases, he's skeptical of the claims. But in many cases, and the book centers around where he does experience, you know, something extraordinary or strange himself. And his whole point is that we all experience these sort of things occasionally, and we can't just blow them off. We've got to realize they're a part of our life, and there's something mm-hmm. that happens. So, yeah, it's really interesting, a different sort of message than what he's, I think, generally known for. People who know him better know that this is a part of his life, but it's kind of fun to talk to him about all of this. It's really interesting.
Great. Well, I look forward to hearing it.
Yep. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But before we get to the interview, of course, we have UFO news.
That's right. And I would like to start off today. Shall I?
You start off every show.
Oh.
It's your
right.
section.
Yeah.
You're the kind of the what is the Mogul? Guy called who wears the funky outfit? And I would love to see you in one of these outfits, like at a circus.
Like a jester?
No, and he leads the circus. He's like, he's the guy who's in charge.
Dude, I never went
the
to a
something
circus.
Master. The
Oh, yeah. The Grand Master?
Yeah, maybe no? That's what it is.
All right, I'm the Grand Master.
Yep.
All right. So I would like to talk about the call to action that is coming from Robert Powell. I got an email address. There is an article that you nicely wrote on this. So this is actually part
Robert
three.
Robert wrote it, actually.
Oh, he did? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I see that now. So this is actually part three of three. Mm-hmm. About the U.S. Nimitz encounter in San Diego on November 14th, 2004. I should say near San Diego. So you already have part one and part two posted. This is basically part three, and it has to do with Robert's call to action. He's actually calling people to, and we'll talk about a letter that's up and getting some, it's up on some news sites. But basically, he wants you to go through these different steps. It's all spelled out. Share and forward information about the phenomenon, and then go to the government track U.S. Congress and its members. And so anyway, basically what – and it has a letter to Congress. Basically everything is spelled out on how to approach this. The bottom line is, it really is asking you to talk to your congressmen and women as to what actually happened back in 2004 and what type of, threat or whatever that it could have posed back then. And this is actually something that is going to come out because it happened on November 14th, like I said, in 2004. It's out now, and it's going to actually, I think, get some traction with all these people writing letters.
Yeah,
and,
I hope
And Robert certainly has supplied everything that anyone listening to this can actually go through this process and actually make a difference, mm-hmm. and I encourage you to do that.
Yeah, so you've interviewed Chris Mellon. That's who wrote this letter. And Robert Powell was on the show a couple weeks ago talking about this Nimitz case. And then he had written this three-part series on it that kind of went over what he talked about on the show, which we posted at Open Minds. And the last one, as you've said, is a call to action to get this letter out, essentially getting Congress people to... hopefully address this. And in particular, they want to focus on John McCain, because they feel he's open to the topic and, you know, supportive of the military. And this was a real military case. And Chris Mellon, and you can fill in, he, you know, he worked for the CIA. He was like what worked for the deputy assistant to the intelligence or something. I mean, really impressive background. And so this is his effort. Robert's trying to help him with and get the word out there on this. He thinks it's something worth doing. And yeah, I guess somebody approached MUFON and asked them to help out too. So MUFON has this posted on their site. Unfortunately, they have very little information. And to be honest, their information's not accurate. They're essentially saying this is a Tom DeLonge effort. And this was Tom DeLonge who mentioned this case at the press conference and everything. No, people, no. And there's a big difference. Chris Mellon has a career in the government and working at high levels in intelligence. Tom DeLonge's a rock star. And Tom DeLonge's a great guy. I love the guy. He's really cool. But of course, he's out there talking about some wild stuff. He's even like promoting some videos and photos that we know are hoaxes. I think he believes them to be real. At least he believes them to represent something that's real. But, you know, much different than Chris Mellon, who is very credible, very conservative. And you've got one of the very few interviews with him on UFOs.
Right. He actually did the interview with me, said he wasn't going to do any more. And I said, well, I can connect you to George Knapp at Coast to Coast if you wanted to do one more interview. And he said, well, maybe. I got the two together, and that's the only other interview that I know that's out there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I lucked out. It was all a timing thing.
Yeah.
Can I just read you the last part of this letter? I think it really makes a lot of sense. So the last part of the letter of this call to action is, my only request, and this is addressing the Congress people, my only request is that you seek a briefing from the Department of the Navy to ascertain the truth for yourself. This is a matter of great consequence, and a small amount of due diligence on your behalf could prove crucial in the revealing vital issues that warrant your attention and that of your colleagues and the American people. Once you are able to confirm the veracity of these events, I trust you will pursue the matter to learn how many other similar events have occurred and what steps need to be taken to inform the American people and take appropriate steps to further reveal the nature of this technology and its origin. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Very well.
What
written.
Was cool is that, you know, when Robert investigated this, just to show kind of what he's talking about there too, is that when Robert was looking into this, of course, they didn't take him that serious with his first FOIA. And then they came back and said, we couldn't find anything. And then he came back at them and said, hey, I just asked you for a FOIA on this event for several different naval assets, meaning several different craft or vessels that were involved with this event. That doesn't make any sense. That means you can't find, or you've lost this information. And then he CC'd some politicians, and that's when they responded and took him seriously. So then they looked into it. The JAG looked into it, and when they contacted the Marine Lieutenant Colonel about this, he was like, oh, the Flying Tic Tac. Yeah, totally. I know all about the Flying Tic Tac. So, I mean, right off the top of his head, he knew this case from 2004. And they told Robert that. They shared this information. They said, you know what? These guys are aware of this UFO sighting. Mm. So they were shocked themselves that, well, this guy has something here. So, I mean, it's very simple for them to do their due diligence, like Chris is talking about in the letter. They just need to contact these same people, and they'll say, you know, let's say it's McCain's office, and they contact them. They'll say, oh, yeah, we know all about the Flying Tic Tac. And, of course, the Navy JAG, which is the Judge Advocate General, kind of their attorneys, I'm sure they're well aware of it now, too, because it's fresh in their minds from Robert's request. So it wouldn't take very much for any of these guys to see the credibility of this case, because, really, they never figured out what it was that they had all witnessed. So,
was that the fresh mint Tic Tac?
I'm not familiar with whatever the white one was. I think it was white.
Oh. Yeah. Mm. I think that's called fresh mint. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So it's fresh mint.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, that is really a fascinating case. And I'm so glad. I mean, that's, to me, that's the best thing I think that came out of that whole Tom DeLonge thing.
Yeah, I feel there was a lot of good things that came out, just mostly related to these gentlemen and their credentials and them showing interest in this field and wanting to actively getting involved in this field. I think personally that that's very important. But on top mm-hmm. of that, yeah, even like you said, I agree with you that probably the most exciting part is that Chris himself shared this extraordinary sighting with everyone. So right. it was a yep. really important part. And I hope MUFON clarifies that, you know, this was Chris Mellon talking about this case and not Tom DeLonge. And bless his heart, but Tom DeLonge, the cases he's referencing are not as strong or as credible as the one that Chris is talking about. Tom is talking about information he says he's gotten from insiders, but we don't know who those insiders are as of yet. And I really love the idea of focusing on what is already out there because I'm actually working on a book. I don't know if you knew this, but I like to focus on what is out there because if you focus on what is already out there and not speculation or what we think might be in there, the stories are amazing. Like this Nimitz case, there are a number of incredible cases out there and official documents out there that can tell a compelling, credible story without having to go into the speculation or what is probably out there. You know, stick with what we know because what we know is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. Well, I hope someone kind of nudges Tom back on track because it would be a bad thing if he continues on.
Yeah, here's what I think needs to happen. Cases. And I think this is a valid topic, and I think listeners are probably interested in this, so it's probably worth spending a minute. What I think needs to happen, thinking from a marketing perspective and really from a PR perspective, which is what needs to happen is that there needs to be a clear distinction that Tom needs to be clear in that, you know, what he's talking about are just kind of his own ideas and separate from the To the Stars Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And what we haven't heard from the To the Stars Academy yet, which I think is vital, is what their purpose is, how they hope to achieve that, and what they need to achieve that. Because they don't have kind of we don't have this cohesive idea of what's going on. And from when I've talked to the guys involved with the To the Stars Academy, their goals and their ideas are much different than what Tom is out there saying, like on the Joe Rogan show and everything. What the To the Stars Academy has is something that is very similar to the SCU group. This is, you know, that Robert Powell is part of that. I sent out a press release and I also posted last week about this group, you know, of very credible professionals who are trying to investigate this phenomena. That's kind of more along what the To the Stars Academy is. These are credible professionals looking for, you know, evidence and information like the Nimitz case to promote that and to inform the public. And then also, hopefully discover more about the phenomena. But what they're not saying is that aliens are bad, aliens are abducting people, the government's having wars with aliens. Tom is saying that. And although when you talk to the To the Stars guys, you know, to like me, they'll clarify this is different than what Tom is saying, which I understand, but I don't think the public understands that. The public understands Tom is that guy out there representing all of this. And and so there's a real issue in that.
I'm really surprised that MUFON posted that story as such, and I hope that someone lets them know that it needs to be you know, corrected.
Yeah, you know what they should do is, because Robert Powell, you know, it's take that part three that I have posted on Open Minds that Robert Powell wrote and maybe put that verbiage there instead to clarify that, you know, what the intent of sending out this letter is. And I think that would be better.
Yeah.
Bring more credibility, because it's not so much a Tom DeLonge thing. In fact, I have not heard Tom DeLonge even mention the Nimitz case. He probably has, but he really has zero, very little to do with this whole Nimitz thing. So, yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, otherwise that group, the Scientific Study or Scientific Coalition for UFOs, we've talked about them before. I've had on the show Richard Hoffman, Morgan Beale, Robert Powell. They started this group along with some others to investigate the Aguadilla, Puerto Rico case, the Homeland Security thing. And they've decided to expand that and bring more people involved to do this serious study. So pretty cool. So far, the Daily Express has covered the story, for better or worse. It's a UK tabloid. But they did a good job with it. But there has been interest from other more serious media that are working on some stories about this. Of course, we weren't expecting there to be a lot of stories about this. I wrote the press release for it and am part of the group as well. But I think the fruits of the efforts, you know, the stories about legitimate cases are what's going to most interest people. And that's what I think will happen. But it's nice to see that there's been some more interest than expected in just even the announcement of the group. Because, of course, this announcement is not as exciting as Tom DeLonge's announcement that was kind of a similar vein a few weeks ago.
Right, right. But, you know, it is... I think the more related, I think I said this last week, actually, you know, the more related to science that any of these organizations can try to, you know, have as a goal using science in their research, I think the better off things are and the more likely we are to get some type of answer eventually.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, with the science events that I do, I work a lot with that. I get to meet different science writers with different groups. In fact, I'm going to be going in a couple of weeks to some astronaut training. I got invited to cover that.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, that's going to be super cool. But so these guys I've gotten to know, and their question has been, well, what science is there when it comes to UFOs, which is a great question, because that's not really what you hear about. That's not what's out there so much. So it's great, because then we get to share with them, well, here are the, there's not a lot, admittedly, but there is some. And what there is something to get excited about. So, and they are interested. So it's educating the media. And that's what they need. They don't always want to write the silly article. They want something fresh and new, and if you can give them something, they'll run with it. But you have to give them something meaty, and something, you know, that they can understand, and you gotta work with them.
Right. No, it's great. It's all good stuff.
Yeah. So that's about all. We're about out of time.
We are, aren't we? Pretty close.
So thank you, Mr. Martin. Are you going to be able to have a show? Is your power back on?
I have power, and I'll tell you what. When it's out, and it was just about a whole week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really learn to appreciate, you know, the bare necessities.
Yeah.
Being able to take a shower, and you know,
imagine those people in Puerto Rico. Oh, which
I
should mention.
I can't.
Have you ever had Antonio Paris on your show?
No, but I've heard the name. I know
great
who he
guy,
is.
And we're out of time, so I'll talk about it more after the interview. But he's in Puerto Rico doing a lot of work out there, and I've got a GoFundMe on the
awesome.
Facebook. But yeah, imagine those people.
No, must be terrible.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for being on the show again, bringing us some UFO news.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, so after this break, we'll be back with John Alexander. For those of you listening on KGRA, you'll hear some commercials. Otherwise, if you're listening to a podcast, you'll just hear a few seconds of music. and we'll be right back. I am happy to welcome back to the show, John Alexander. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon. Glad to be with you, Alejandro.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you again, and I'm excited about the new book, Reality Denied. This just came out. When did it actually hit the shelves? Just a couple weeks ago?
Well, about a month ago now. Formally was released on the 25th of September.
Mm-hmm. So, what inspired you to write this book?
What inspired me? Well, I thought there was a need to get some information out. Now, you missed the subtitle, which I think is really important, mm-hmm. which is, firsthand experiences with things that can't happen, but did. And so have been around the world, have traveled to all 8 continents, have experienced some really strange things. Part of the emphasis, though, is not just on my experiences, but recognizing that everybody has these things. And what I'm doing is trying to encourage people to speak up about these events that happen basically in everybody's life from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a saying that you use in the beginning of the book. You say that your premise is that anything that does happen can happen. And that seems obvious, but what did you mean behind that?
Well, what I mean is that we, in conventional scientific terms, and I do take conventional science, that too frequently say that's impossible, it can't happen, therefore it didn't. Which is, an easy way to sort of explain away many of these phenomena that actually do occur.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that, and I think you kind of allude to this, that professionals or maybe people that are at high levels, doctors, others where maybe admitting this sort of thing can be a detriment to their careers, don't acknowledge when they experience things. Would that be true?
Well, yeah, but that's also true for just average people who are afraid to report things that happen for fear of being labeled as crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I do admit that I have kind of an agenda, and that's to try and make it assist in allowing our best and brightest scientists to get involved in doing this without risking their reputation or livelihood. Unfortunately, there's a huge disincentive for top scientists to study these things because it will, it can and will taint your reputation.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about how it's just the average person, also. But in your travels around the world, does it seem like there are other cultures where this isn't as much of a problem? Where denying these strange realities that happen to them isn't something that occurs?
Oh, that's very much true, and I point frequently to Brazil, a whole chapter on experiences we had in Brazil, but. I think one of the fundamental problems is the belief system has been established. In the West, we have a materialistic one, and we could talk about that. But basically, it says that everything's material. You can cut to smaller and smaller pieces and finally get to the God particle or whatever. Now, and our education system, totally supports this limited view. Having said that, when I go to places, as I said, like Brazil in particular, where you have very high-level people who have been educated in institutions that pretty much parallel the materialistic views that just predominate ours, but at the same time can incorporate spiritist beliefs, or that there are multidimensional realities, a world of spirits and things. And they can integrate those things seamlessly. It seems like it's a bit of a conflict, but again, the people I work with down there have been, you know, very senior officers or ministerial government levels and people like that. And if we can talk about John of God, or that might be one area to look at. But throughout Brazil, spiritist religions play a very significant role and are accepted by people with, you know, very materialistic viewpoints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely get into John of God a little bit later. But what's really interesting about this is that you are typically seen as, and I think you kind of like walking into, let's say, a UFO conference and being that guy who's challenging people's kind of more fringe beliefs. And that's what, how do you square that? How do you square those two things?
Yeah, it's quite simple. I challenge both sides. Take on the conventional sciences who say, you know, UFOs can't be real and whatnot. As you know, in my UFO book, the first line was, UFOs are real and absolutely are, and do give us phenomenal kinds of experiences. On the other side of it, one of my slides says, there's no lower limits to crazy. And you have people who put out outrageous tales that are demonstrably false, and at times, at the conferences you're describing, have the biggest draw. And that, mm-hmm. to me, is equally problematic to the scientists who won't bother looking at it.
Now, what's funny is, it almost seems like, and I wonder if you do have this experience, like when you walk into a UFO conference, you are perceived as, now that's why I like doing these interviews with you, because it's not the truth, but you're kind of perceived as this closed-minded person who's trying to put the kibosh on the whole, these ideas. Now, when you walk into certain, let's say environments or where there's a lot of very straight-laced people who are maybe closed-minded, are you seen as kind of the out-there guy?
Oh, yeah. I can show you the scars from both sides. There's no doubt about that. Because, I'll give you the example I put in the book. I was being interviewed by a Scientific American, and the topic had to do with my work in non-lethal weapons, very straightforward kinds of things. But they didn't like the general concept. So they attacked me ad hominem and said words kind of to the effect that since I had beliefs that most scientists were skeptical of, you know, my entire person, you know, should be challenged. And others have said I shouldn't be managing money. That therein is one of the problems that I mentioned with other scientists who want to work in these fields, but, when they have to compete for grants and things like that, they can get cut off just by association with these fields. I mean, in the book, I hit a couple of the famous ones. You know, with John Mack, for instance, who was an eminent psychiatrist at Harvard University, Pulitzer Prize winner, and yet when he wrote about abduction cases, he was sanctioned by the university, something that should never happen to a tenured professor, and the only time it has ever happened at Harvard. Another one, of course, is Bob John, and he was the dean of the School of Engineering at Princeton, went on to create the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Laboratory, or PEAR, And, you know, he was considered a pariah, even though his regular credentials are absolutely impeccable. So there are taints that can hurt both professionally and economically if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. But you're a warrior. You're kind of a champion for science and reason when you go to the UFO kind of conventions, and then you're a champion for open-mindedness and when you go to these more...
I wouldn't agree with that. I'm a champion for rational thought on both sides of the fence, and I don't think my position changes depending on the audience.
Hmm. Okay. That makes sense. That's what I was getting at. That's great. So, getting into the book and some of the topics. Now, a lot of these are personal stories, like you said, but they touch on certain what you feel are realities or the experiences or things you've observed that have happened, even though conventionally they may believe things that can't happen. And just to begin, because this is a UFO show, you know, and it's kind of where your book begins too, we'll get into this UFO account. But I think you would probably agree a lot of this phenomena that you're discussing is related, seems kind of interrelated.
Well, that's my fundamental thesis. And in fact, I use a slide in all of these presentations, and it shows UFOs, abductions, near-death experiences, poltergeist phenomena, cryptozoology, remote viewing, deals with shamans, psychokinesis, voodoo. And the point is, it is my view, that these things are all interrelated. And one of the fundamental problems we have in the various groups is that they want to soappipe and look at only certain aspects of what I certainly believe is a far larger issue, and that is, you know, non-local mind and the literally total interconnectedness of the universe.
Now, the book starts with kind of NIDS and your work with Bigelow, and we've talked quite a bit about that, but someone I've never had on my show, who everybody tells me is really interesting, and who you've met and you had an experience with, is Chris Bledsoe. In a nutshell, you can explain what his claims are, what he's saying he experienced.
Well, nutshells with Chris are difficult because the case is so complicated. And frankly, if I heard it, you know, without the addendum of my own, I'd really be skeptical, because it begins with an encounter with multiple UFOs, multiple witnesses involved, interactions with apparently both sentient non-human entities, as well as some things that he thought, or Chris Jr. particularly thought, were pretty much robotic. After the incident, or the initial phase of the incident, back at the house, he gets chased. And one of the more significant aspects is that he runs away, gets caught, and he says, "Okay, you got me." And then he reports that telepathically, this entity says to him, "You don't understand. We're here to help you." And so he's not sure what that means. The next day, around noon, he suddenly realizes that he has not taken his medicine for Crohn's disease. He had Crohn's for about 12 years. It can be, you know, very debilitating, certainly socially inhibiting. And from that time on, 2007, has never, ever taken another pill again. Now, the aspect of it that really convinced me was that a couple of years ago, just about this time of year, Victoria and I went out and visited with Chris, and he took us down to the river, Cape Fear River, where the initial incident occurred, and showed us where various aspects of it happened. we came back up, and it was early evening and just getting dark. And we had the car near a field there, and Chris and I are leaning against the left front fender in Victoria.
All right. Well, the phone cut off there. Something happened with Skype, but we are back using our Plan B system. And you were talking about how you were with Chris and Victoria at the location where he had his original encounter, and you and Chris were leaning up against the car by the river.
Right, and this is the critical juncture. It's now dark, but we're watching planes fly over, and so we knew what the trajectories were. And as he's explaining things to me, all of a sudden he goes, "Oh, I think they're here." And within about 15 seconds or less, this thing pops into view right above us and goes zipping off. You know, it didn't fly in from someplace. It definitely wasn't an aircraft. It was very spectacular. Lasted only a few seconds, but for me was definitely confirmation because of the temporal relationship. That's the thing I emphasized. That, I mean, it was just seconds after he said, "I think they're here," that this object appeared, and as I said, it was just a light in the sky and went zipping off, but certainly got my attention.
Yeah, you said it was a blast. So was it a very large, just bright light that seemed to be fairly near?
I can't say fairly near. It was definitely up in the sky. It was much brighter than anything around. Importantly, it was not I said, an aircraft that was transiting the area. It just popped into view directly above us and zipped off. Can't say that I could say there was structure to it, but it certainly was there. Now, I have had skeptics suggest that it was an iridium flare, that these do occur from time to time, and they even went so far as to think that Chris might have known, you know, when this was going to occur and take an advantage of it. That is just categorically not true. Mm-hmm. He had no idea. I mean, the situation was very spontaneous as to where we would be at any given time. So it was my second personal UFO sighting. It's most dramatic, but it tended to lend credence to a lot of the other things that Chris had told me. Now, there are some other things that happened back at the house that also tended to support his description of events that are ongoing. I had an email from him yesterday with video that he had taken of something flying around near his place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you said, I mean, although his claims seem to be pretty extraordinary, at least all the feedback I've gotten from everyone has been that, you know, he's very credible. In fact, MUFON on their television show went out there and did an investigation when James Carrion was a director, who was a more careful investigator. I mean, he was very good at it, I feel. And they felt that it was a very credible case, too.
Chris's take on that is that MUFON did not do a case and were not supportive. So,
really?
Yeah.
That is interesting. Yeah, because at least on the show they ended it where, you know, they felt he was the real deal. And then Richard Lang, who was part of that investigation, felt that way. And then he also, and this is one, you know, strange part of it, is that he describes these beings that he runs into as having spindly kind of arms and legs, right, and these large heads.
Right. Yeah. You could do a whole show just on Chris. In fact, I'd encourage you to get him on to tell the story. The other thing that was interesting was interacting with the entire family and asking them individually about what had happened, and their recollections are very congruent. Again, importantly, you know, this was not a one-time event. These things are continuing to occur. Now, you probably know about the tree in the backyard, and that's pretty spectacular if you wanted to cover that, because we had incidents there as well.
Sure, if you don't mind sharing.
Oh, not at all, but this was sometime after the initial event, but his tree literally caught fire from the inside out. It was sort of hollowed out, so it wasn't like it had been hit by lightning or, you know, anything else, and the flames were burning out. Now, since that time, there are attributions of spontaneous healings that have taken place near that. Now, our personal experience was that after we had seen the UFO down at near the river, we were back there and walking out towards the tree. This is a pretty good-sized lot, several acres, so it's not like most people's small backyard. And as we approached it, I was walking behind Chris and Victoria, and she started into, I said, I can't quite call it a dance, but there are certain things that I have observed when anomalous events are taking place, because she seems to be very sensitive to them. And, you know, she also was confirming having experiences there. This is independent of what Chris and his family had relayed to us, but tended to support the their descriptions.
Mm-hmm. What I like starting off on this is because, you know, we're touching on two different areas that you go into that are really interesting, which is healing, and we'll get into that, but also this idea of the telepathy, which, of course, so many people describe as far as encounters with alien beings, and, of course, Chris Bledsoe and his experience. And in particular, what I really found interesting in your book, and I hadn't really, I can't recall reading this anywhere, but, of course, it makes sense. You going out and having these oceans, adventures, and attempting to, and in some cases apparently being able to connect with dolphins and whales.
Oh, that's totally different, but yeah. See, one of the things I encourage is that for people to get actively involved, and I have told many of the researchers who make these phenomenal claims, say, okay, let's go do it. And I've got to say, you know, the flip side or the conservative side is it's amazing how many people, once you say, well, let's go do it, say, well, no, we can't do this, and come up with excuses for not engaging it. The early experiments there in the 1980s took place in the Bahamas. We had a ship that went out. We stayed in the area for about a week. And these were wild dolphins, so, you know, they were not in captivity, not trained in any way. We had protocols that said, okay, we get in the water. Now, I understand they have changed slightly, because when we did it, touching or physical contact was not allowed or could not be initiated by humans. If they wanted to initiate contact, that was allowed. But
I'm going to stop you right here, because we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back to finish the rest of this story with the dolphins and get in maybe a little bit with the whales and then into the healing. But I want to let people know, of course, this is Open Mind UFO Radio. If you're listening on KGRA, you'll hear some commercials. Otherwise, if you're listening to the podcast, we'll have a short musical break, and then we will be back with John Alexander, so stay tuned. We are back with John Alexander. This is Open Mind UFO Radio. I'm your host, Alejandro Rojas. And you were talking about going to the Bahamas to have this experience with these dolphins. And in this experience, you were with kind of a group who does this, who seeks to communicate with them.
No, not at all. These were all novices in that area. One was the guy who sponsored it was Ted Rockwell, who was actually a nuclear engineer who had been Admiral Rickover's technical director when they created the nuclear navy. Another, some of the people will know, was Scott Jones, who was a retired naval aviator, and our wives. And all of us were interested in telepathy in these experiments. And we knew of a boat that was having encountering dolphins out there, but it was mostly for people to go out and, you know, swim with them as the pods came in at their volition. So we had a lot of that. And one of the things I'll say is absolutely amazing is you're in the water and you're having these animals that are, you know, 700-900 pounds just gliding right by you and sometimes within an inch or two. But that was all up to them. Now, what was of interest, and we discussed in detail in the book, was a former wife was engaged in a telepathic experiment in this set of circumstances, hadn't seen the dolphins for quite a while. Now, dolphins range over a couple of hundred miles any given day as the pod separates and goes out, looks for food, and comes back in. And then initially she says, they're quite a ways away. Maybe half an hour later, we have these dolphins rolling in from, I believe it was the northeast. So we watched them, and this time we said, okay, we're not going to get in the water. Nobody gets in the water to distract them. And we used a number of telepathic communications where she directed the actions of the dolphins, which included some pretty dramatic turns, like 180-degree turns from the directions that the pod was going. And this action, you know, went on for, you know, several minutes, and then they finally went off. But the point was that they were responding very clearly to the specific instructions that were being transmitted telepathically. Now, as I described in the book, there were another set of experiments under much more controlled conditions, but those were with dolphins in captivity, and in which they had to follow very complex sets of instructions, and that seemed to work pretty well. You had mentioned, and we were engaged, a different group, but we were out in Tonga, the Kingdom of Tonga. Most people won't know where that is, but it's out in the middle of the Pacific. It's one of these very large kingdoms of which only 2% is actually land. We flew to Fiji and then caught a plane for a couple of hours back to the Tonga and then up to the northern islands. But there we had interaction with humpback whales in the open. And I point out that there were some of these that literally took place within inches. I like to say that obviously the whales don't hold a grudge, because interactions between humans and whales has not always been good for the whales.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you felt this was kind of unrelated, but I was thinking along the lines of, you know, whatever mechanism, the mind-to-mind or whatever might be happening there, may be similar.
No. When I say unrelated, I just mean these trips were not connected.
Chris Bledsoe wasn't there.
Different people. As far as the types of interaction, mm-hmm. very, very similar.
Which would, I mean, lend credibility if there is some sort of innate ability that is somehow latent in us that we cannot access yet, maybe without practice. Of course, that's something you have a lot of experience in also, even in an official capacity, at least in the military, this kind of trying to access these parts of our abilities that you know, we can't use every day. It would make sense that more advanced civilizations perhaps would have been able to master these things.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we talk about advanced civilizations per se, because you're now touching on one of the areas I'm interested in, you know, the abductions. And this is a problem for me with the UFO community, because they have kind of limited parameters that they're willing to accept. Mm-hmm. And one of my points is that we have reports of interactions between humans and sentient non-human beings throughout the entirety of human history. I mean, for millennia. And, oh, by the way, that there's coming in on little metal craft is actually a fairly new wrinkle to a very old story that, you know, transcends every culture, every place in the world, time, space, no matter how you cut it, these interactions are reported.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, which is a great point that, of course, it could be more complicated, which is why I love that term that you use, these non-human sentient beings. Could be more complicated than simply an advanced civilization from elsewhere.
Oh, I think it is. I have a problem with the folks who say it's little gray guys from Zeta Reticuli or wherever and try to nail it down. Mm-hmm. You know, you start with the whole UFO phenomena. As you know, I say, I don't know what you mean, because I've got little balls of light. I've got huge craft a mile or more across that are very solid, and thousands of variations. And so why is it that we have all these variations? The same thing is true of the interactions between beings. I mean, I got little tiny ones, sometimes called elves, fairy, the Menahuni in Hawaii and around the world. And then we've got big ones, small ones, and whatnot. So you have this wide range of variability. And if it was something that was as simple as, oh, I come from planet X or whatever, you wouldn't expect to find that.
Mm-hmm. Now, healing, getting back to, I want to get into that, because one of the interesting aspects, of course, you know, Chris Bledsoe had this healing that seemed to happen. He no longer has Crohn's disease, which, of course, is very serious. So that's an incredible thing, especially just in how it affects his life. And now he's more enabled to live his life. I mean, people know, you know, Crohn's is nothing small. It affects you on a daily basis in a negative way. But now he's healed of that, and you have also met with people who have seem to have various healing capabilities, including a gentleman who doesn't even use hands-on or anything, just mind to body.
I've met with many of those folks. Let me address John of God, because that, in my view, is one of the most dramatic and most interesting ones, because the types of healings run the gambit. There are ones where he does physical surgery. I mean, cuts folks open, and no doubt about that. He's got another methodology of taking a knife and scraping eyeballs with no apparent pain. In the book, I've got pictures I took of him taking these forceps and sticking them up the nasal cavity well into where the brain would be.
Yeah, you can't even see the forceps in that picture at all.
Yeah, and those are, you know, at least 6-8 inches up the nose. Now, but he also has other ones where he has spiritual healing, and some of those take place, you know, on the location there in Abyssinia, and others are situations in which it goes, you know, they've gone, you know, thousands of miles and had interaction. There's a famous case of a guy by the name of Wayne Dyer, who was a very well-known public speaker, and he contracted leukemia. And he had decided he was going to go down to Brazil to meet with John of God, and then he decides against it, but his wife and a friend go down. And what they did was to arrange the John of God and the spirits in Abedinia to remotely do the healing in Hawaii. And what they did was they notified Dyer of when and where it was going to take place. And they also said, look, here's what you got to do. You know, dress all in white. You know, you can only drink water, lie down, and rest. Do not move for at least 24 hours, which, by the way, are the instructions that are given out when you're at the CASA. So, anyway, time passes, and he goes, well, you know, I feel good when I'm walking, so I'm going to go for a walk in the gardens here. Made it a couple hundred feet and totally collapsed, just as if he had just come out of physical surgery. Now, the healing went on for about a week, but at the end of a week, he was cured, or at least the leukemia was totally in remission and never returned.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, pretty shocking. And, I mean, these people just seem to, for the most part, kind of, and you would know best, kind of intuitively within themselves figure out how to do these things.
Well, according to the theory here is that you have spirit entities who actually went out and performed the psychic surgery. Mm-hmm. Now, I know we're dealing, you know, some problems in belief structures there, but for them, that is the way that these healings occur. Having said that, I've been in Abedinia more than once. When we first went, there were a couple of hundred people there, maybe. The last time, which I think was 14, there were thousands of people. And I think part of that may be attributed to Oprah Winfrey, because she went down and did a series of programs from the CASA. But one of the things I noticed, they have a room there that is filled with crutches and braces, wheelchairs, etc. Now, the question I have is what I noticed when we were physically present, everybody who came in a wheelchair left in a wheelchair. So why is it that we have these dramatic cases like the ones of Wayne Dyer? There's another one literally resurrecting the dead. And that these cases seem to happen, and others do not. And why is it, you know, that you have no restrictions on distance, on time, some of these other things? Now, John will tell you that he says he doesn't do any of these, that it is the spirit entities that are helping him, and that he has a cadre of several hundred of discarnate entities, some of whom are surgeons, and, you know, who help with these healing processes when they do take place.
With the guy who had the forceps, you know, in that image in your book, what happened with him? What was he there for, and what happened?
I don't know.
Okay.
Remember, this took place. There were, again, hundreds of people who were there. What I can say is that, you know, the physical aspects, so you see these, you know, and they weren't collapsing forceps or anything, and the cuts are real. It's not, you know, folding over skin or some of the magician's tricks, if you will. But, you know, he took it out. A, there's no exhibition of pain of any kind, and there was like maybe a drop of blood, you know, at most like a drop. And I also saw incisions that took place that normally you'd have huge amounts of bleeding, and yet you do not see that taking place. The other thing that seems to be remarkable is that they've had no indication of sepsis or infections, if you will, doing these very rudimentary procedures.
Mm-hmm. So that's just a really very small sample of what's in your book. We've only got a few minutes left, and I want to talk about some ideas that kind of encompass everything, but that's just a small sample of the sort of denied realities that are in the book. But it seems like, and to get back to the beginning, but I think this is important, your message, even when it comes to the way we speak about the phenomena, such as, you know, not pigeonholing, what is UFOs, there's a variety of different things, that all of this is not just more complicated and varied than we like to kind of pigeonhole these things into, maybe just to distance them also, but they're actually kind of aspects of our everyday lives in a way.
Yes. I don't know if you got the email that I sent you and a number of other people, but I had a materialization take place here on my desk on Halloween that really hard to explain, except we can just say it really happened. It was an incident where I had an envelope that I really needed because of the material in it, and that had spent a day looking for it, literally rearranged my desk, and came in the next morning, and here the envelope is sitting on top of a copy of Reality Denied.
That was a great little... these things happen continuously.
Yeah.
So,
what I want to encourage, though, is that people have these things happen. I've gotten any number of emails in regards to that from people saying this happened and that happened. Talk about it. You know, we need to make these things normal, as opposed to paranormal, whatever that is.
Right. And I mean, these terms that we use, paranormal, supernatural, and I cringe using the terms too, because they are part of the natural world.
Right.
I mean, if it's happening, it is part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very important point.
So with you, I mean, you're observing these phenomena, you're recording these phenomena, but a lot of people kind of have some angst in trying to explain this phenomena. And that may be, you know, part of our problem here in the West. If we can't explain the mechanism, then we don't want to acknowledge it, even though there's plenty of things that we do every day, drugs we use, even medical procedures where we don't understand the mechanisms, but we know it works. So we use them on a regular basis. But and then we pretend like we know what they are when we really don't. What do you think? Do you think, is it important? Is it as important to define the mechanisms?
Well,
Yes.
And I think here is what we discussed earlier, the idea of the importance of belief systems. And in the West, we come from this fundamental mechanism that it's a materialist universe. I talk, as you know, in the book a lot about shamans, and we've seen shamans all over the world. Now, in the West, if you believe in a spirit world, we think of that as separate and distinct from the physical world. Many of the shamans I've dealt with, however, move seamlessly, you know, across the spectrum between the spirit world and the real world. And I'm going to argue that there really is a spiritual dimension, maybe multiple ones, and that is a key factor and needs to be accepted. One of the issues that I think you've alluded to is why you don't we have a number of organizations who have vested interest in not having these things real. A, makes their belief system from a scientific perspective very complicated. And the other, if I can dabble on religions, if you will, is they like to control the information flow. That any of these things that we haven't hit ayahuasca or even near-death experiences, those sorts of things, where you have people who are having direct experience with God, with the Supreme Being, with these supernatural sorts of things. The church likes to be the arbiter and be the one to explain, and that's a control mechanism.
Well, thank you very much. We are out of time. I mean, the time just flows. It's just super terribly interesting. The book is wonderful. And thank you for being on the show again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much to John Alexander for joining us once again. And, of course, I apologize for the audio difficulty, but I think it turned out okay. It's funny, I use, you know, this backup system that I use for recording interviews for print articles that records from my phone, but it worked pretty well. Thank goodness I had that backup, because I don't know what was going on with Skype. But thanks, John, for being so patient and on a really, really interesting topic. So, reality denied, firsthand experiences with things that can't happen but did. Very interesting stuff. It was actually has a foreword by Uri Geller, someone John knows very well, and it was printed by Anomalist Books. So, the Anomalist is a cool dude who's tweeting UFOs and paranormal stuff, and he's got a website. It was his organization or his company that has published John's book. So kind of cool that those guys had connected. But anyway, check out his book. Very interesting. Also, go to either my Facebook page or Twitter. You're going to see a GoFundMe, or you can go to the website of Antonio Paris, and you can Google his name, Antonio Paris, just like it sounds, like the town. And he is doing a GoFundMe for Puerto Rico. He is actually taking this stuff out and posting videos of him delivering things in Puerto Rico. That's where he's from. Really cool, really important stuff. And Antonio's been on the show before. He's great. He's an astronomer and a scientist. He's actually trying to become an astronaut. But he's done some really important things and has been into UFO and paranormal investigations. That's why I know him, and he's been on the show. But really great guy. It's really cool what he's doing, and I definitely want to support what he's doing. And what's cool is, you know, that this is your money and your efforts are going to be taken to Puerto Rico. And you'll be able to watch on YouTube the video of him taking the stuff out there. So really important to help out. Otherwise, more and more speakers. We have Bill Burns from UFO Hunters. He's going to join us at the UFO Congress. So check out UFOCongress.com for the latest on that. We've also posted more videos on the UFO Congress on the demand video service. So check that out as well. Remember, that's only a few bucks. And that's a great way to support us, because we don't charge for anything else. And to be honest, I'm starting to think that I might have to, and don't get upset, it'll be very little money, but I might have to start charging for the radio show, because it's difficult. You know, we give a lot of free information, but of course this takes a lot of time, and I'd hate to stop doing the show altogether, and I don't think you all want that either. But we've got a lot of other exciting things. Thank you so much to Martin Willis from UFO Podcast. Thank you to Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music, and thank you very much to Systematics for the bumper music that we play. Of course, as usual, thank you to you, the listener, for being here. Until next time, adios, muchachos.